Need a truck that can power through any task? The Ford F-150 is your heavy-duty solution. Boasting mighty engine options like the 400-horsepower 3.5-liter EcoBoost V6, it can tow up to 14,000 pounds. Whether hauling equipment or towing toys, the F-150 tackles it all. Its proven performance, innovative features, and exceptional hauling make it the hardest worker on or off the job. The F-150, the future of tough trucks, is here.
And he wasn't a nutcase, he wasn't a sociopath, he wasn't an outcast. McCandless was something else.
Welcome to the J-Rad Podcast, where the map ends and adventure begins. We guide, explore, and conquer your favorite adventure books and legends. I'm Arya, and I'm your host today, joined by my co-hosts,
Drew,
Jet,
and our fan favorite,
Raphael.
Today, we'll be exploring Into the Wild by John Krakauer and the Heart of Freedom and Adventures that defines the journey of Christopher McCandless.
So, Into the Wild by John Krakauer tells the story, the true story of a young man, Christopher McCandless, who, after graduating from Emory University, abandons all his possessions, donates all his savings, and embarks on a journey into the wilderness of Alaska.
The book explores Chris's inability to live under the restrictions of society, emphasizing his need for freedom and connections to nature. Through the use of many sources, such as interviews and Chris's diary, Krakauer is able to argue that Chris's journey is driven by purpose and meaning rather than madness, as many others suggest. As usual, this podcast contains spoilers covering general details of the story. If you don't want the book to be spoiled, we recommend that you read the book and then come back later.
In this episode, we had three themes that we kind of wanted to go over. Rejecting society, idealism versus reality, and Chris's search for identity. And our guiding question for this episode is, do we think that Chris's motivations were rooted in mental illness or a genuine pursuit for happiness? Something greater.
So yeah, I'd like to start off by saying originally when I started reading this book and when I was probably like 50% through, I thought Chris McCandless was absolutely crazy. I would tell myself like, why is this guy spending everything? Why is this guy like burning his money, getting rid of his car and getting rid of all his possessions? Donating like the only money he has, like he had 15,000, and then as soon as he earned like 60 cents, he would give those away. Like, why does he do that? So originally I thought he was mentally ill because I thought to myself, like, who in their right mind just gets rid of money, gets rid of what's necessary in life? But then as we got further into the book, I realized that Chris McCandless just like viewed life in a different way. I think all of us are crazy in our own way, and we're all like trapped by society's norms, but Chris McCandless needed like in his essence to leave society and to survive. He just couldn't abide by the rules.
I think Krakauer kind of wrote the book with the intention of like, you know, as you're going through it, you like when you start, you really think he's insane and you don't understand his actions and you learn more and more about him. That's why the explanation of the relationship with his family came closer to the end. Right, so like as you're going through it, you realize more and more that his actions were you know, rooted in sanity. I have a question for you guys. So one parallel that I noticed while reading this book was between Siddhartha, which we covered in a previous episode, and Into the Wild. Right, like with Siddhartha, when he becomes a samana, he gives away all of his, you know, his possessions. He throws away kind of his name, you know, as a Brahmin, similar to how you know, to what Chris kind of does, where he donates all of his money. He doesn't tell people that he graduated from Emory with honors and, you know, kind of throws away his reputation almost, right? He starts going by a different name, similar to Siddhartha. And so did you guys, when you were reading Siddhartha, did you think that he was crazy? Like when I was reading it, at least there was no thought in my mind that he was insane. It kind of made sense to me. Whereas when I was reading Into the Wild, I was like, oh, this guy's crazy at first when I heard what he was doing. But in reality, they were doing very similar things.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't really know why that is. I think it just might be based on the style of the writing. And it's also, I feel, Siddhartha, you can suspend your realism a little bit or much more easily than you can in this text.
Maybe the fact that it's fiction, like going into it, knowing that it's fiction, you tell yourself, oh, there's going to be a happy ending.
Yeah.
But then reading Chris McCandless, already in the author's note, we hear that Chris McCandless is going to die because he says there are two main things that result in his death. So maybe knowing the outcome of a story changes the way we perceive the process. Mm-hmm. Like, people who go, like, the first guy who successfully climbed up Mount Everest, for example, like, everyone viewed him as a hero because he was able to achieve such a great task. But if he had failed, everyone would say, like, oh my God, he's so crazy. Why would he try something so stupid? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the case with Chris McCandless.
I think there's what Krakauer brings up, you know, by telling the story of Chris, is that there's this interesting line in society. You know, obviously what we define as crazy isn't scientific. It's mostly like a social construct. So like Raphael was just saying, like, you know, the person who decided to climb Mount Everest for the first time, you can think like they're insane for doing that. Like, that's impossible, but you know, you can do these things. At the same time, Chris had a very interesting take on how he kind of perceived, you know, different like social constructs and societal things. So he didn't want to watch for a while because he didn't want to be able to tell the time. A really interesting one that I thought was kind of his rejection of industrialization in a way, where obviously he kind of finds this balance between, you know, not conforming to society and then being realistic. So there was one point in the book where he, you know, he's back and forth from South Dakota a lot, and Alaska a couple times. And he says at one point, using a plane would be cheating, but instead he hitchhikes. So he kind of defines this line for himself where, okay, like he knows that it would be impossible to just walk back and forth over and over again, but hitchhiking is kind of like, he's kind of following the rules of his own game.
He sets the constraints.
Yeah.
Connecting back to what you said a second ago, or like at the start of your like segment, I guess, I feel like one of the reasons why, and this is also connecting back to what I said about Siddhartha, I feel like another reason why, apart from like the fiction and you know, true story part of it, that we consider Chris kind of crazy at the start of the book and we don't think of Siddhartha as crazy is like the setting of the story. You know, Siddhartha is set in like ancient India. There was a lot of people back then who like didn't conform to society's rules because they weren't as strong. Whereas when we look at Chris's story, is at a very similar time to ours, right? And so like we can relate much more to the time period in which, you know, Chris's story occurred, right? Where they have cars and they have school and, you know, like we know what Emory University is, you know. And so I think part of it is because we're more used to society's like modern day constructs.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to move on, maybe talk a little bit about, so of course we covered that, sure, he's not crazy at this point in time. And I respect Chris McCandless for following his own path and doing what he wants to do. But something that really annoyed me during the whole book was knowing how he rejected his family, how he completely abandoned his mom, his dad, and even his sister, who he was very close to. And I don't know why he does that. I mean, obviously, his dad was manipulative and like degraded him as a child and was abusive. And his mom wanted him to like conform to society's rules. But why do we think that he even abandoned his sister, and even on his journey to going to Alaska, couldn't bond with anyone, or like couldn't really give his whole part to them and like show them who he really was?
I mean, I think it's because he mentions in the text, or Walt, it's either Walt or...
Walt's
or,
the dad, by the way.
Yeah, Walt is the dad. And, or Billy. One of them is like, if we had known where he was, or if we knew what he was doing, we would like go to him and stop him. So I think he knew that was going to happen. So he kind of put his own importance over his parents, because he wanted to do something for himself and he didn't want anyone to stop him. He didn't want any obstacles. And that came at the cost of like sacrificing his family. But to him, that was worth it.
Yeah, I want to know also that because of his dad's abuse and the abuse that he grew up with, maybe that resulted in him like having to escape society altogether.
I agree. And I think a big, you know, kind of how he was, you know, mentally structured has to do with his family. He describes in the book that they were kind of like really on top of him all the time. And like, he didn't get a lot of freedom. His dad, you know, really wanted him to pursue certain things. There was a certain point where I forget, he was playing a certain sport. I think was it pickleball? He's playing pickleball or tennis. It was one of those two. And he had this very natural talent. This is his dad, Walt, describing his talent, by the way. And he sees like this potential in him, but you know, once he's like, you know, plays like an actual good player, He doesn't want to take feedback. Like, hey, you should, like, improve your swing in this way. He refuses to do that. So those things like that, it kind of, what you discover in the book, it kind of makes him afraid of human attachment while he's on his journey in a way. And we see that when he met, what's his name, Ron Franz, who he met in, like, Palm Springs and formed a very close relationship with. He kind of very brutally broke away from Franz, whose kids and wife died. Franz was an old man who who Chris met, and Ron really saw Chris as like a child, or his child, and he eventually broke away to go on his own journey.
Ron actually loved Chris so much to the point where he asked Chris to be his grandson. He asked him, like, I just wanted to really adopt you as my grandson. Like, I love you. I have a strong bond with you. And Chris couldn't even do it for Ron as a favor. Like, he wouldn't see him regardless, but it was just a small action. But obviously to Chris, it wasn't. And it would mean that he would have to be part of society's norms.
What do you think that like kind of shows about his relationship with his family though? Cause it's at the same time, he sacrifices his family, he gets rid of them, but he's not willing to kind of fully, legally dissociate himself from them. So what do you think that shows about his relationship?
I think that the him, like, not legally dissociating from them doesn't have as much to do with, like, him liking them and more so him not really caring about, like, legal names or, like, nomenclature or anything like that. I just think that he didn't believe in, like, government. And so we didn't care enough to actually go, you know, to whatever office you have to go to in order to, you know. I think the other thing is that we see that, like, even from a very young age, that Chris, like, rejects, like, help and like, support. And so, like, one example of this on his journey or, like, close to his journey when he's in college, he's, you know, he has a very old, it was a yellow Datsun.
Yes, yeah.
And he completely, even though it's incredibly old, and his family offers to buy him a new car, he still wants to keep his own, right? He rejects help, similar to how, like, he refused to fly on the airplane. And so I think part of it is just, like, a human, like, you know, like a deep internal, like, not wanting to get help or support.
Mm-hmm. Adding two things onto that, going back to Drew's point about the tennis, also the golfing, it's like he does not want to be coached. He doesn't want to be told a way to do something. Mm-hmm. So that's another way he rejects us, like, kind of other people telling him what to do. But it's also, it mentions a couple times throughout the end of the book how Chris not only wanted to like be in tune with nature, but he wanted to prove to other people he could live independently, and especially to his dad, that he didn't need anyone else's help, and he could live on his own, on a, like, accord.
Yeah, that's a great point by Ari, I agree. But also now, I want to talk about the structure of the book, which was something that interested me more than anything. So it's really like a big magazine, right? Everything's structured very, like, in a very interesting manner. He uses a lot of anecdotes. He uses all the information from Chris's diaries. He uses a lot of interviews with his family members and with a lot of people who Chris met throughout his life, throughout his journey, and connects everything in a very hard manner. I mean, it's really hard to do because he connected all these different pieces of evidence from all across the United States and had to put them chronologically. And I was wondering what you guys thought about the chronology of the book, because it doesn't fully go from when Chris left Emory to when he died. It kind of goes back and forth.
Yeah.
So what were you guys' thoughts on that?
I thought it was structured interestingly, because it seemed like a documentary almost, where it was super unique to me in a way where we learn about a character, right? We're following Chris, but we're not actually, like, you know, in his perspective at all. It's kind of like you learn bits and pieces about him through other people and his letters and all the notes he left behind and evidence. And I think it's cool because it kind of shows how everyone is multifaceted, and, like, each person that he interacted with that Krakauer is able to interview kind of reveals something about Chris. And I just thought that was super interesting.
I think the biggest reason he did that is because it puts the focus not on the story and not on the actual content of what happened, but on the motivations and kind of this underlying kind of belief that some people have and the need that they need to escape and get out of this system. Mm-hmm. And I think putting the focus on that, not only does it broaden the scope of the book, but it also helps you see a specific perspective on life, and it helps you reflect on your own and kind of acknowledge the fact that everything we do is kind of because we want to appeal someone else or a certain way of life. And I think this book really helps you discover that.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk about our favorite moments from the book?
Yeah, I think, yeah, let's, as we wrap up this episode.
So,
I guess I'll start. One of the stories that Krakauer wrote about that really, you know, struck me was, as we mentioned earlier, Chris's journey with Ron was super interesting to see how, you know, he kind of interacted with a super close relationship like that.
I agree. I actually want to bring up one specific detail about, you know, Chris's relationship with Ron that, like, struck us all. Because I recall when we were all reading the book together, when we convened to speak about it, we all talked about this one specific moment. And so, you know, Krakauer covers how Ron was a veteran who also, you know, originally had a drinking problem, I think, when he came back from war. And he quit drinking. And then after he heard about Chris's death, he had, you know, he had whiskey for the first time in how many years? 15?
Yeah, I think so.
Something crazy after the death of his, like, family members. And so, you know, obviously this isn't like a happy moment of the book that I love, but I think it's just like a very interesting detail that was put into the book that shows Chris's impact on, you know, those around him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Drew, my favorite scenes also involved Ron. I thought those scenes were really emotional. And around the time where we're learning about Ron, Krakauer puts the quote, "We like companionship, see, but we can't stand to be around people for very long. So we get ourselves lost, come back for a while, and then get the hell out again." So I think that really well describes Chris. He's always in and out, being with people, and then having to leave them. And I think the quote really well emphasizes how Chris enjoys the company of others, but ultimately, like, has to be away and on his own and can't be from society for extended periods of time. And it also shows that even, like, with Ron, someone who we got really close to, he couldn't, he had to be independent and had to have solitude in that situation. I was going to ask for your favorite part.
Oh, yes. My favorite part of the book was definitely when he starts, when Krakauer starts drawing parallels between McCandless's adventure and those of others. But in specific, I really enjoyed the parallels between him and Ruess. I think that's because you can definitely tell how this is just another, I almost want to say, Chris clone who had the same kind of adventure. And I think it's really interesting to use that as a support that he's not crazy because someone else has done it. And people's beliefs towards that are not necessarily that he's insane, but some people's are that he's insane. So I just thought it was good to have.
Yeah.
I guess as we wrap up, do we recommend this book?
I 100% do. I recommend it especially to younger people. I think younger people always, like, are dealing with getting validations from others, conforming, like, trying to be like those around you, conforming to, like, peer pressure and things like that. And I think this book is basically a greater extent of that.
I agree. I think an interesting thing that we learned from Chris is that, you know, we get to choose what constraints we have upon ourselves. Like, we don't need society to tell that to us. And I think that's especially relevant for young adults who are, you know, leaving their homes, going to college, you know, graduating, etc. Because that's when you really have kind of control over your own life and you get to actually set those constraints. And so I think it's powerful to know that you're in power over those.
Yeah, I love that. I agree with you.
I guess to wrap up then, I guess we have to answer our question. Do we think that his journey was rooted in, you know, psychopathy, or was it justified?
I think it was justified. He knew what he was getting himself into. In his letters, we see that he's very organized. We see he has a diary explaining his plan every day, explaining how much he needs to eat, how much weight he's losing, where he's gone. And he knows a lot about the environment, reads a lot of books, and I think he's well-informed.
I agree. I think his journey was justified, but maybe some of his actions were hurtful to other people. But ultimately, he lived out his own goals, and that's what was important to him.
Yeah, and like we always do, we should all rate it out of 10. Arya, you want to start off?
Yeah, I'd give it a solid 7.75.
I'd say yes. I'd say 7.75 too. I'm in between a 7.5 and 8.
Very specific.
I'll give it an 8.
I'll give it an 8 as well. I loved it. I thought it was a great book.
And as always, we will end out with a quote from the book. This quote was from Chris to Wayne Westerberger. He goes, "If this adventure proves fatal and you don't ever hear from me again, I want you to know you're a great man. I now walk into the wild." Thank you for tuning in on this episode of J-Rad Podcast. We'll see you guys in the next one.
J-Rad out.
J-Rad out.
Bang, bang, bang.